handicapping, interviews, taking you inside the sport of kings. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, always a viable option, and at our website, stevebick.com. And I tell you, get ready to build an ark. That's enough already. The horse that's named enough already. The 3-year old actually should find out what the motivation was. It very well could be day after day after day. Tina and I were driving around. Was it yesterday or Sunday? And you know, for those of you that know the area, I mean the banks are overflowing. So between winter melt-off and nonstop rain. Well, the turf course at Saratoga is going to be ready. Let's just hope that the turf course at Aqueduct also remains at the ready. We're going to talk to Andy later, and there is the Pick 6 carryover from Sunday that goes from the 4th through the 9th on Thursday, and I already saw comments that some players say this thing will turn into a double carryover into Friday. We'll see. I'm sure Andy's already done the Thursday work because that's what he does. That's what obsessive compulsiveness does to to horse players and anybody that, you know, you're going to watch the replays. And the other day, what was it, on Wednesday? On Wednesday, he had texted me for something, and I texted him right back, and I started to, and he said, "I can't right now, I'm busy." And I realized, oh, the PPs came out for, you know, for Saturday, so it was like, it was probably 4:30, and he was already knee deep in the Saturday handicapping, so. I'm anxious to hear, actually, because it looks like a good sequence. And the Keeneland action as well. I didn't really prepare for looking at the Wednesday Keeneland card, but I did print it out. And of course, the 2-year-old racing, a big part of what's going on there. And there's a couple of, Wednesday, Thursday, the openers. Always intrigued by the first crop sires, particularly, and their first runners. In fact, tomorrow, I think we're going to get our first, is it the first West Coast that we're going to get a chance? Did West Coast run the other day? I don't think so. I think tomorrow, Twist of Faith, John Enos, for Del Ridge with a homebred. The Looks Zippy, 35-2, blast a week ago today. There's also progeny of the ill-fated Lieutenant on Thursday. In fact, a New York bred that Paul McEntee sends out. And speaking of the Lieutenant, notably, look how it all ties together. You can't make this stuff up. A sibling, the sibling, I suppose, of the Lieutenant running on Wednesday, tomorrow, at Keeneland. Was it Wednesday? I'm already knee deep in PPs for the week. It is Wednesday. You know, my new printer, which I like, my new printer has a bad habit of two-sided printing, and I I'm a late convert to two-sided printing, but if you don't switch it back, things end up printing on both sides that you didn't necessarily want printed on both sides, including occasionally PPs. So it's on the back side. Seventh race tomorrow at Keeneland, second level allowance and second race off the layoff. For John Gunther's homebred, the pioneer of the Nile four-year-olds, out of Stage Magic, Stage Raider. And, of course, Stage Magic, the dam of the Lieutenant, and Justify. So Stage Raider, who put those nice wins together last spring, then had some time off and came back at Gulfstream for Chad, puts the blinkers on here. And goes around two turns for the first time. Stage Raider, an important colt for John Gunther and Chad. And you know what? We'll ask Chad Brown about Stage Raider, because Chad's going to join us at about 10:40 this morning. Celebrate his second Bluegrass win. His first Bluegrass winner. Correct, if you said Good Magic. Good job. Good job. I also want to ask him about this budding partnership, relationship going on with Flavian Pratt. So, a ton of things to discuss with Chad and get caught up with some of the late winter results that I didn't reach out to him for. After the good weekend at Tampa, had what, two or three stake wins in there with that Bleecker Street we haven't talked about, and Virginia Joy at Gulfstream won the very one. And I want to ask him, we never talked about in Italian either. So there's a few winners from the last month or so to discuss with Chad, and then there's some of the good things, obviously, that are coming up, not just at Churchill, but really everywhere. And, you know, if you don't realize it, brought this up a little bit with yesterday with Rich, but Chad came within literally a bob, a jump, a little half a path left or right of having just a magical day. I mean, Reinvestment Risk wasn't beating Speaker's Corner, but highly respected and early voting. What else did they have to do to win the Wood and the Bayshore? My gosh. But they all get to keep, moving forward, and there's still plenty of big game ahead for the three-year-olds. The whole spring unfolds. And we'll see what his thoughts are about search results. You heard Mig yesterday kind of explain what he thought was her disdain for taking some kickback, and see how we'll regroup with her. But the big conversation, Zandon, and going into Derby, potentially, as Marty McGee yesterday floated Zandon as the favorite. So I don't think it certainly doesn't affect Chad's approach, but heading to the Downs with a obvious top contender for the Rose Blanket. How many different ways can you package the reference to Derby? First Saturday, the Rose Blanket, the Gold Trophy. There's all the a bunch of different ways to frame it. So looking forward to talking to Chad. Looking forward to talking to Phil D'Amato. Phil's going to join us in this hour to talk about the upset in the Santa Anita Oaks. Desert Dawn. It's really a nice story. You gotta get some of the details. Cupid, first. I think that's the first graded stake winner for Cupid. And Cupid, you know, one of those stallions that you kind of, you know, being first of all son of Tappet, and then a horse himself that didn't start. He himself didn't start his career till he was three, so he was late developing. And as soon as the page turned from 2-year-olds to 3-year-olds, the Cupids kind of came to life. Looking forward to tomorrow, actually, too, also to talk about the stallion side of things, the breeding side with Sid Fernando, Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. Let me give you the rest of the lineup. Phil D'Amato was mentioned, and last week I think I noted, I forgot to mention it yesterday, but I think I noted that the Green Group, Len Green, John Green, trying to put more green in your pocket. And of course, one of the top accounting firms in not just on the East Coast, but certainly for, you know, for horse owners, a fabulous choice and resource. And here we are within days of filing for your taxes. I wanted to at least get a last second instruction and some ideas and some things that you might not know, or you forgot, or your accountant hasn't brought up. So Len Green is going to join us at the top of hour two. Andy Serling, of course, later. And here in just a couple of minutes, for those that are up early and were checking social media feeds, and if you follow me, you saw that had the sad and concerning duty to donate to a GoFundMe for Julio Pazua. And those of, you know, particularly if you're New York based and a New York fan and player, you're more familiar with Pazua than, you know, if you're from other, you know, other parts of the country. And Pazua hasn't, you know, ridden in the afternoon for, I don't know, 5 years maybe, but he has continued to ply the trade in the morning, exercise riding, and a top exercise rider. And he was badly injured, multiple vertebrae injury at Belmont. I saw the, I think it was Sunday morning, and I saw, might have been Junior Alvarado that first alerted everybody. And Aaron Yagoda has organized the GoFundMe, and it literally in less than 12 hours has, just checking now, $7,500 already has been raised toward support for Pazua. So we'll get an update. In fact, I might as well even turn, and I told Aaron 9:15, so I might as well reach for him, and we'll get an update. And I also talked before the show, I think I've got to let him know, but Anthony Stabile reached out too. And Anthony's dad had Pazua's book when Pazua was, you know, really going great. And he won his share of stakes. And of course, most notably, Dixie Brass for Dennis Bryda won a Met Mile. And he also won either a Manhattan or a Man of War. He won one of the summer grade one turf races. And when I was becoming, you know, really interested in and going regularly and you know, living, you know, in, at the time in the city, and also living on the Jersey Shore. Pazua, you know, Pazua was part of the, you know, part of the journeyman colony, and more than capable. In fact, I'm going to pull up, let me pull up his 1,300 career wins, 1,316 career wins, in about a little, about 30 year career. Highlights the 87. In fact, that would have been to maybe Dixie Brass. So let me see. No, Dixie Brass was later, actually. He was 92. 87. It was the Manhattan. It was the Manhattan. Silver Voice. He won the Manhattan in 87. Bug-Eyed Betty won the Long Look. Wow. He had a very big year. Lead Kindly Light won the Athena. He won his first graded stake win was in the Fountain of Youth. Ensign Rhythm in 86. Anyway, let me get Aaron in here, and we'll talk about helping Julio Pazua. And I'm probably going to grab Anthony as well. So, hey, here we go. And it sounds, here we, yep, there you go. Turn the, yeah. Aaron Yagoda joins us. And good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on about this.
No, not at all. Anything I can do to get you on, because you know you're hard to interview. You're tough to nail down.
Oh well, thanks. Anyway, yes, it's Julio's just a great guy. I mean, I just looked now, it was just over 8,000 in less than 12 hours, and you know, a lot of people remember Julio. My first memory of Julio goes back to 1986 when I was at University of Miami. He was one of the leading riders, and he had this little signature hand raise every time he won the race, and then I was there when he won the Met Mile on Dixie Brass. I didn't like Dixie Brass that day, but he won it anyway. And, you know, it's just a good cause for a good person. And it's amazing how the racing community, the racing family, the racing fans have all been jumping in. I mean, Junior Alvarado was the first jockey to put in, and Tyler Gaffleone, and many other riders, the Ortizes, they all put in, trainers, Linda Rice, Mark Cassie, Eddie Barker, and even the casual fan that I don't know is putting in $10 and $25. And it's amazing how these guys share locker rooms, and, you know, we're all competitors, but when the family's down, they all seem to rally around, and it's just a wonderful thing.
Well, and of course, just, you know, just on Sunday, we all were pitching in you know, pushing for contributions for the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund for the big telethon. I didn't see the final total, but I know it eclipsed the $250,000 that was the goal. That came like late afternoon, like 4 o'clock on Sunday. So I'll pull up I bet you the final number was, you know, in the $300,000 range. The news, though, is fairly, I mean, as serious an injury as this is, multiple vertebrae fracture, he's got feeling in the extremities, correct?
Well, he is moving his legs now. He wasn't moving them before. So I went to visit him the other day at the hospital. He's wiggling his feet. He's not strong enough to walk yet, they said, but he is having trouble with both his arms. Actually, you know, I walk into his hospital room, and, you know, you don't know what you're going to see or what kind of attitude. And you walk in, and he gives you a big smile. And I said, oh, Julio, I'm so sorry. He's like, it's okay, Poppy. It's part of the game. And he just smiled. And his wife was feeding him Jell-O. And he's like, look, she feeds me like a baby. And I wish I had that. I would not have had that attitude if you came to visit me in the hospital. I can tell you that. So it's just amazing. It's contagious. I'm going to go see him again tomorrow.
Where is he, by the way?
He's at Winthrop Hospital in room 4716. So, 4617. I'm sorry, room 4617. They don't allow a lot of visitors, just one at a time. I don't have a phone number. I just stop by every couple of days to see him. And you walk in, and he just puts a big smile on his face. His wife is by his side, and it's really a sad, but, you know, he's got great attitude.
Well, and I'm sure, you know, when you read the list of contributors and you know, keep them advised as to, you know, where the help is coming from. I mentioned Anthony Stabile called me before the show, too, Aaron and Anthony, you know, he said Julio would like family to the Stabiles. I guess his father had Julio's book. And
Yes, for a long time they were together, the two of them. And I just want to say that I'm trying to thank everybody that's been donating. My daughter had to help me with the GoFundMe. I'm not very good with the social media postings. So I am trying to thank everyone. But if I don't get to you, I want to thank you on the Steve Bick Show personally for helping Julio. And he will get every dollar that we get raised, I promise.
I asked Anthony a question. And it's one of those loaded questions. Do we know how old Julio is?
I believe he's in his early 60s.
Okay.
And he was riding 9 horses a day and stayed fit. And he really was a great breeze rider. I saw that. I looked up his stats. He did ride his last race in 2018. He rode 2 races. And then before that, he didn't ride since 2013. So I don't know what he did in between. I don't know if he showed up for a cameo event or something and rode 2 races. But he did have a very long career. And he was well-loved by the diehard racing fans from the days of Iron Gavel and all those hard winters. Julio rode through them.
You know, that's right. Iron Gavel. Wow. Wow. Jesus. Won the Stymie in 97.
Yeah, there's a YouTube on video. If you put in Iron Gavel, I don't know how I found it, and there was Julio riding Iron Gavel, so I wasn't good enough to post a video, but that's all I could find.
And well, your good friends, the Greens and Len Green, it just so happens, here, unbelievable how funny this game is. I pull up, here's Iron Gavel winning the Stymie in February of 97 with Julio, and as the favorite, Gaspar Machera trained. Len Green had an entry in there with Joe Orsino.
Oh, really? Well, don't tell him that. That might hurt his contribution. I'm going to guilt him into a contribution in a little while.
Unbelievable.
Bring that up after.
Okay. Too funny. I did. Here's Dixie Brass winning the Met wire to wire as a 3-year-old too. You know, when there was the part of racing history, the 3-year-olds that you know, that competed in the Met, and he had won.
I was there. I was there that day, and if Stabile's listening, I remember him distinctly jumping up and down and going crazy as a little kid. So
I'm gonna get.
We grew up together at the racetrack. He's like a brother from another mother, growing up at the racetrack with me. And I remember how crazy he was going. Of course, won the Met Mile.
Well, Jews and Italians. It's a thing. Well, I had to reach out and put this at the forefront in these opening hours of GoFundMe to help Julio Pazua. And you know, I know that we do this on too regular a basis, that there's just one, you know, one calamity, frankly, after another, when you have so many people involved in the game, and there's a lot of people, Aaron, obviously, that are out there without a safety net, to be honest.
Right. That's, you know, someone said it's very hard when you make a living when there's an ambulance either following you or right station nearby. So these guys take it into their consideration when they choose this profession, hoping it never happens. But when it does happen and they're down, everybody in the racing family and fans seem to pick everybody else up. So it's just a wonderful cause. And if people could retweet it or post it on Facebook, I don't have a lot of followers. I don't really tweet a lot. So if anyone can get it out there, I mean, just in a short 12 hours, I send it to, you know, a few people, and those people are gracious enough to keep it going. So if anyone's out there and they could just keep it going, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, and of course, you know, it's a busy time for you, even though all the shipping is obviously done. What kind of Pesach season did Streitz have?
We had a very good one, but this isn't about Streitz. It's about Julio. But you can find us in all your local stores across the country.
Well, and Aaron, I felt that this was an important opportunity to pass along the most sage advice, some of the most sage advice my mother ever gave me. When you're dealing with the matzo meal, with the Streitz matzo meal, making your matzo balls, remember, you can double the recipe. You can never triple it.
Got it. All right. Well, at this time to add it together, please, I know people that are celebrating Passover, but please don't pass over donating to Julio Pazua.
Hey, now, well done. Aaron, you go to everybody, and you still owe me, you know, the comprehensive. We're going to do it at Belmont Week this year.
All right, deal. Thank you very much, everyone.
Aaron Yagoda, folks, and you can follow Aaron on Twitter, Yagoda Aaron, Yagoda Aaron. And I would say there's only one Aaron, but there's two, because Aaron Wellman spells it Aron as well. So there's two Aarons. And both, they're almost like bookends in racing on either coast. As promised, I'm going to reach out for Anthony, because his as Aaron just referenced, his relationship with Julio and the familial tie as well. And we welcome Anthony Stabile. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me this morning.
No, I'm thrilled you reached out to check in. And you know, Aaron having organized the GoFundMe and a chance for you, and obviously on the broadcast on America's Day at the Races, I'm sure you'll also talk about Julio. But you basically grew up, you know, in the household and as part of the family.
It was funny hearing Aaron actually refer to me as little. I don't think I've ever been little. I was younger, but I was never little. Yes, Aaron and I grew up there together. And Julio, you know, my dad was a trainer for a while, and then turned to becoming an agent. He cut his teeth with Bobby Woodhouse, and Barry Brown arranged for Julio to come up from South Florida. And this was in the fall of 91. And my dad went to, you know, people that have been friends to him his whole life, including the chief, the late, great Alan Jerkins. And he said, "Chief, I'm bringing this guy up here. Can we get a little help?" And Alan put Pazoo on his first horse here, a horse named Shopping, for Jack Dreyfus in Hobo Farm. And the horse won by about a dozen lengths. And in true Alan fashion, he never rode a horse for Alan again. But Alan got him going. And the rest is history. Of those 1,300 wins, wow, I would probably say my dad being his agent, we're responsible for about 250 of them, him and Julio together. They were like a bad marriage. They got back and forth together, I think, five times before it was all. So he divorced Pazua more often than he did four times before him and my mom got divorced. It was Pazua's certainly family.
Well, not they couldn't possibly have gotten together and broken up more than Malika and Migliori.
They did. It was five. It was varying things. Pazula went back to South America at one point. You know, sometimes they see, you know, like when Dixie Brass won the Withers and the Met Mile, I think the expectations got a little high, and they didn't have a great Saratoga meet, and they broke. That was the first divorce. And now, I mean, Drew would have made a ton of money off them now as a lawyer with all the divorces they had. But yeah, I mean, Julio is. He was a fun rider. You know, he was the kind of guy where he loved going to work every day, loves riding, would, you know, welcome, like, he was family. So when my mom and I would get to the track, my mom's standing about a dozen feet from me, when my mom and I would get to the track, the first stop would be the room. And Pazoo never gave her a loser. He never gave her a loser. He was uncanny with that. And I was telling you this earlier. So Pazua came here in 91. I was 14 years old. He also had a knack for winning the last race at a time when the last race was the only triple on the card, which certainly helped bankrolls immensely. But as a 14-year-old kid, I would decide how much money I was taking to the track by sticking my hand in a pillowcase and pulling it out. And 90% of that money was made on Julio Pazua. It could be 180, it could be 560. You never knew what was coming at it. With no 50s, of course. There were just 100s and 20s. No 50s. Of course not. No 50s. So you'd stick your hand in, whatever would come out, would come out. I remember when he won the Met Mile. And the him getting on Dixie Brass is a great story. Rafael Mojica was his regular rider, and he got hurt. And it was between Pazua and Richie Migliori, who was really good friends with Dennis Brida. And he, for some reason, Pazua got the mount. I don't remember the story. Richie would remember. Pazua got the mount, and the plan was to take him mid-pack, and you know, he was going to run in the Withers, which was the opening day feature at Belmont back then. And Pazua went 22-44, 8 and change, 133-3 for the mile, wire to wire, paid $17. And Dennis Bride, I believe his quote to the Naira press team was, "If I had a rifle at the half mile pole, I would have picked them off." something to that effect. And then I'm 99% sure you can. This is accurate. He duplicated all of the fractions from the Withers in the Met Mile. He beat In Excess, Pleasant Tap. In Excess was the favorite that day. Pleasant Tap was second. He went the exact same fractions. It was 22-2, 44-4, 8-1, 133-3 in both races. And I remember he got in with a feather in the Met Mile.
107.
And Pazua, we went to dinner Saturday night at King Umberto's, and he ordered grilled chicken and asparagus. And my ears were bleeding when I heard that order at King Umberto's. Grilled chicken and asparagus. My ears started bleeding on sight. And he looked at me. He used to call a long story, but we used to call each other Stone, like that. And he nudged me. He said, "Stone." I said, "Yeah, Pazua." He goes, "I won't eat anything until Monday." And he tacked like 10. And throughout the day, Tom Durkin came on the mic, and Dixie Brass now 2 pounds over, Dixie Brass now 1 pound over, no overweight for Dixie Brass. I think he was the 6, if I'm not mistaken.
7, yeah.
Seven?
Yeah.
Okay. And, yeah, he did the 7. I remember after the Met Mile, he drove down to Florida with his good friend Carlos Correa in his Pathfinder. He brought his family back here. And my dad and I helped him unpack the trucks when they came back from Florida. And he got a bucket of KFC, and he ate like half the bucket by himself. He's a character. You know, people, you know, sometimes the language barrier gets in the way. But he is an absolute character. We have time for another quick one?
Yeah, of course.
So, Julio Pazua is a big part of the substitute silks getting changed at the New York Racing Association. For you old-school, hard-knocking racing fans out there, you remember it was basically just, you know, I could hear it to this day, the late, great Marshall Cassidy coming on, substitute silks in blue and white. And it would just be blue and white at Aqueduct, green and white at Belmont, red and white at Saratoga. So the World Wrestling Federation, now World Wrestling Entertainment, was having an event on the Intrepid in the early 90s. Body Slam Yokozuna, who was part of the Samoan wrestling family, distant relative of The Rock. And I should say The Rock was a distant relative of his. And Yokozuna was this grand, you know, this sumo champion, and that was his character. And he was going to be on the Intrepid on 4th of July, and there was going to be a body slam competition. Yoko was about 6 months ago. And it was a whole story arc was to bring Lex Luger, the rival wrestling version of Hulk Hogan, in. And they announced on WWE programming that they're going to have open tryouts. So my father and I are sitting down in the basement watching wrestling, like I did every Saturday morning. And he looks at me, he's like, "I'm going to get Pazua on the Intrepid to body slam Yokozuna." I was like, "Come on, man. This is outlandish for you." Sure enough, goes to Pazua. Pazua would have done anything. My father could have told him he wanted him to scale the Statue of Liberty and jump. Pazua would have been like, "Yeah, sure, no problem." Pazua don't care. So we go to Terry Meeks and Kenny Noh at the time, and we're like, you know, "Look, this is what we're going to do." And my father, who's not one to mince words, really, "These substitute silks aren't going to cut it." So why don't you have Antoinette Brocklebank make a nice set of silks? And sure enough, that's how the tree on the Belmont silks and the awning on the Saratoga silks and the big A on the Aqueduct silks kind of came to be. And we drove to Stamford, Connecticut, WWE headquarters. Pazua cut a couple of promos. He told everybody he had a secret. That's how he was going to body slam Yokozuna. And when we got to the boat on we got to the Intrepid on 4th of July. And my dad runs this idea by Vince McMahon. So they get in the ring, and of course Pazua tries to body slam Yokozuna. And Yokozuna laughs, and you know it's over with. He turns around, and Mr. Fuji was Yokozuna's manager. He hands him a bowl of rice and a couple of chopsticks. And Pazua, in his behind him, in his pants, in his jockey pants, had his whip. And he twirled and gave Yoko a crack on his rear end and then scurried out of the ring. And the place, the Intrepid popped like you would never believe. It was fantastic. I was front row. Mike Hushin, the great Mike Hushin, was there with me with his family.
Oh, how fun.
Lou Coble was my assistant at the time. Lou works in the ID office now. Lou was there. Yep. Lou and a couple of his sons were there. Yeah, we had a great day that day on the Intrepid back in the early 90s on 4th of July. But Pazua is up for anything.
Well, we got to get him up and walking and getting him back healthy. The GoFundMe, there's a link at my on my feed, also at Facebook, and we'll keep beating the drum here to help Julio and the family.
Yeah, for sure. I retweeted the links. Aaron is just Aaron, salt of the earth. Great people. Him and Linda, you know, really nice of them to set up the page and Aaron to get it. And Aaron, we have to thank Little Yagoda for getting things rolling because I'm not surprised that Aaron couldn't get it. I probably couldn't get it going either. So I'm going to go and stop by and see Julio today. I'll shoot you a message later. Hopefully
Please.
He's doing well. I will. And I'm going to go see him. And, Aaron said something that I would like to piggyback. These guys and gals go out there every day, jockeys, trainers, everybody, and we're all fighting. Even us handicappers and gamblers, right? We're all fighting for that same dollar. But when the chips are down, there is no better family than the racing family. And everybody rallies and helps each other out. And, you know, I think we've seen it the last few years, especially with COVID going on and just instances like this. That GoFundMe is already up over $7,600 and it's been up like a dozen hours.
Yep.
And it's been up for 12, you know, pretty quiet hours here on the East Coast from 9 to 9. So I don't ordinarily ask, but if you can help Julio out, everybody would appreciate it. I would really appreciate it. So Steve's tweeted the links out. I've tweeted the links out. Like you mentioned, we'll talk about it on America's Day at the Races. I'll mention it with Andy on Talking Horses this week. And yeah, for sure. One last quick one with Easter around the corner. So Pazua's first holiday up in the Northeast was Thanksgiving of 91. And early back, you don't have to tell you this, Steve, the early post of 10:30, the great days, the halcyon days. We come walking out, and my father turns to Missoula, are you coming over for Thanksgiving? And he says, yeah, me and my family. And it's literally 2:30 on Thanksgiving Day, and we're looking at each other like, your family. And I have no idea his family was up. And it went from one Pazua to about seven Pazuas and Jorge Chavez's wife. And I was given the unenviable task of walking into the Stabile household and telling Mom, who's sitting right next to me now, that we had seven new guests coming. And Mom's the best. She scrambled, and we had people eating in the playroom. We had people eating in the living room. We had cans of corn were materializing out of nowhere to get made. And yeah, I mean, there's always, listen, when you cook for Anthony and Tony Stabile most of your life, there's still leftovers. You can have 77 people here, there's going to be leftovers. But it went off without a hitch, and as always. But
that's,
yeah, that
tremendous.
Was he would show up late to something, and he would just turn to you and he would say, Peruvian time. You tell him to be somewhere at 3 o'clock and show up at 6. And Zool, where were you? Peruvian time. That's what his famous thing was. He's the greatest. He's the absolute greatest. I can't wait to see him later. I wish he was under better circumstances. Thank you. You and Aaron are a couple of mentions for doing this. Thanks, Steve.
My pleasure, and I'm glad we're able to connect and you keep us updated. And anything we need to pass along, do not hesitate, Anthony. I appreciate it.
I will. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, everyone.
Anthony Stabile, everybody, and obviously with his dad and having Julio's book, I mean everybody in New York is going to have, you know, is going to echo this kind of sentiment. But Anthony, obviously, growing up, you know, literally in with Pazua in the household, essentially. We're going to stay right here till the top of the hour. As I mentioned, Len Green is going to join us from the Green Group, and Chad Brown in hour two, Andy Serling, hour three, and I see where Andy just donated as well. It's actually over now. It's up to 8,500 in less than 12 hours to help Julio Pazua. And actually, there was another one that... since we're on this topic, and as I reach for Phil D'Amato, I want to mention another GoFundMe from over the weekend. Travis Pee-wee Young, who certainly people between, you know, Mid-American racing, Travis. Everybody knows as Pee-wee, was coming from Fairgrounds up to Indiana Grand and was not just arrested, but roughed up in Mississippi, and has got some legal difficulties now to answer. And Richard Giannini, I forwarded this, I think, on Saturday or Sunday, put together a fundraiser for Pee-wee. And I saw, you know, a lot of, you know, Kentucky, Indiana, Louisiana horsemen donating. So I'll make you aware of this one, too. And that's raised $4,800 of a $6,000 goal. It's part and parcel around the racetrack. It's always a challenge. So there's always something. And we all, you know, pull together. So I'll put a link up to that one again as well. All right, let's reach for Phil D'Amato and talk to Phil about a couple of nice stake wins over the weekend. Phil D'Amato joining us, and always a pleasure. Phil, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks.
Hey, the story, I'm really anxious to hear the Oak story, because the upset, Desert Dawn in the Santa Anita Oaks and an Arizona bred by Cupid, this feels like one of those fun stories.
Yeah, you know, she was just one of those fillies. You know, I went to the training center for the owner and watched her horses train, and I had my eyes really on another filly that was really flashy, and the guy, Monty Schwanevelt, who breaks her 2-year-old, says, "You really need to look at this filly," and that was Desert Dawn. She's a kind of gangly filly, good size, good scope, but she didn't look like she had, you know, much speed, but he said, when you watch her breeze, you know, you'll be impressed. So, you know, we brought her in to Santa Anita, and he was right. I mean, she just trained like a filly with some ability from the get-go, and you know, here we are today.
What's notable, and she was, you know, she was grade
two placed in the Chandelier in her third career start. She broke her maiden at Del Mar going a mile. So, you know, being by Cupid and out of an Honor and Glory mare, we should mention the owner breeder, H&E Ranch, out of Arizona. And, you know, Cupid seems to be getting, you know, two-turn horses and horses that, you know, develop as they get a little older, and he being by Tappet, you know, there's also a little flightiness aspect. And so here you are heading to the Oaks with a filly that's had seven starts. And given what we're seeing among the sophomores, that's a pretty seasoned resume heading to Kentucky. And should also note that she bired an 88. So she put herself, I mean, granted, we know what Kathleen O and Secret Oath are capable of, etc. But she put herself in pretty nice company here, Phil.
Yeah, you know, I thought those, albeit a small field, you know, a Dare Manor and Ain't Easy, those are nice, you know, graded stake winners already. And with the resume and, you know, and hype a Dare Manor had behind her to beat those fillies and do it, you know, slowly pulling away. I definitely thought it you know, merits a shot if she trains well to run her in the Kentucky Oaks.
Why not? And you know, grade one opportunities. I mean, you thought along the same lines, running her in the Breeders' Cup, and you know, yes, she was beaten, you know, handily, and was 6 of 6, but. You know, this was only her second race off the winter break as well, so she'll come into Kentucky third off the layoff.
Yeah, she's really steadily developed since then. We gave her a nice little break to recoup after that, and she's matured. And you know, I really like the way she came out of the race. I mean, that race for as good of a performance as I thought it was, it really didn't take much out of her. So I'm happy what I see so far, and hopefully we'll make it there in the first week of May.
H&E, I mean, I've seen their names, and you know, Turf Paradise is one thing, but you know, they've got horses. I see them running in California.
Yeah, Elena Krim, she runs H&E. She kind of does everything. She'll you know, buy, sell, pin hook, you name it. She has a farm there in Arizona. She's been very good to me. She's always, you know, you do right by your horses, and you know, she, as patient as I am, she's very good with that. And you know, just I kept telling her, you know, this Desert Dawn is on the cusp, you know, and, you know, we've been running third and fourth, and you know, she's been very patient, and finally when it all worked out the other day, she was on cloud nine, as were we all, and hopefully we can do some good in Kentucky.
Unbelievable. And I'm just looking, you had that overdue was also hers.
Yeah, we've had some, you know, some modest luck so far, but this is you know, by far our best performer to date, and she has some nice ones in the wings that I haven't run yet, but yeah, very, very supportive, and she runs a nice operation.
Well, and it, as it happens, that mare, Ashley's Glory, was a nice horse for her, a five-time winner that Arlene Blake trained. And now produces a graded stake winner, not just a graded stake winner. I mean, this is a serious, you know, you win the Santa Anita Oaks, it's a major win.
I really think, you know, slowly but surely, there's going to be more upside to her. You know, she can run long. And she's got this big, you know, kind of gangly frame. And I think the more she grows into it and gets stronger and fills out, I think, you know, she'll be able to compete, you know, with the big girls here now and hopefully throughout the year.
Well, it's certainly for the Arizona program, and Arizona's got plenty of difficulties that they face. And so a win like this, a graded stake win at Santa Anita, good for their, good for Arizona breeders, for their attitude and looking forward. So looking forward to seeing her in Kentucky. Let me ask you about a couple of other performances. A small field for the Royal Heroine, but the Going Global won the way a 2-5 shot is supposed to.
Yeah, she's come back in really good form. I ran her on the dirt in her prior race, and it probably was not the smartest move on my part, but we were trying to woo the Eclipse Award voters, and it just didn't work out. But she's come back. We gave her a nice little 30-day freshening, and that the Royal Heroine was just a little workout for her. She kind of ran from the quarter pole to the eighth pole and then was in hand, but I think it was a nice, perfect prep for the Gamely back in 6 weeks, and that's a grade one, and that's what we'll point to.
Very nice. And, of course, last year, the grade one in the summer, the Del Mar Oaks, and I would imagine, the filly and mare turf at Keeneland, the Breeders' Cup, her season-ending goal down the road.
Definitely in Breeders' Cup, and throughout the year, we'll just kind of see what race will eventually point to. Who knows? It could be
the mile,
against the boys, or we could stretch her out a little bit further with the girls. But I think we'll kind of learn a lot more through the campaign this year and figure it out.
Might do well to. Well, it's obviously too late for the spring, but what's the opportunity in the fall to get a run over that turf course, because the footing there with that sand-based course is not to everybody's liking.
Yeah, no doubt. That's the number one question, and I think Keeneland, the prior Breeders' Cup with the California Shippers, usually at that time of year it's raining all week and it's in a deep bog and favors Europeans, but I think this filly, she's shown, she's run on a couple different turf courses in different situations. I don't think it would affect her as much as it would your normal non-turtle foot type of horse, but we shall see. Now, maybe after the Gamely we experiment and ship her around a little.
Well, and she's, in fact, I'm going to put this aside, because I don't think I've ever brought this up with Sid, but tomorrow with Sid I'm going to bring up this pedigree. She's out of an Invasor mare, as it happens, and by Maymus, the Irish stallion, was bred in Ireland, and kind of an interesting sidebar. All right, I'm going to put that there, and we'll look for Going Global in the Gamely. And, of course, Rispoli rode both of these that we're talking about, and with him coming east. In fact, Phil, talk a little bit about these shifting sands, as it were, and the jockey colony changes that are happening out there, and how you adjust to it.
I think you need a whole show to figure this one out. But I think all the Spanish trainers in California are trying to figure it out as well. I think you're going to give a lot of opportunities to riders that haven't had a lot of opportunities in the past, and we'll see, which ones can rise up the ranks. You've got a new shooter in here like Ramon Vasquez.
Yeah.
And I think, he'll add some quality to the colony, no doubt. But we'll see. Who knows? You might see another shipper or two jocks wise to come in and give it a go over here.
Well, let's talk about some other runners out of the weekend. You had a very busy Saturday, certainly, and coming down the hill, and I haven't had a chance to reach out for Eddie Keneally yet, but Eddie won the Monrovia to open the card Saturday coming down the hill. You were second with Alice Marble, and kind of, you know, that when you come down the hill, being on the inside, it can be problematic, but Maldonado, you know, took control early and just couldn't withstand Brooke Marie late.
Yeah, my filly, she gave a really good performance. You know, she fought Eddie's filly through the length of the stretch. His was better. You know, in hindsight, I wish we'd kind of opened up and used our speed a little bit more. But that's horse racing. We'll try it again next time. But you know, I think Alice Marble, she's a filly. She's slowly improving as well. And who knows, maybe she might be the kind of filly that can stretch out to two turns using her tactical speed down the road. So I might entertain giving that a shot.
Yeah, for those that don't know, and you know, this is now a five-year-old mare that really had a late start. You know, Steve Miotti had her early. She's had plenty of interruptions. You know, there's a lot of layoff lines in her PPs, but it feels like she's finally healthy and you know, 100%.
Yeah, she's had a little you know, issues down the road. Nothing major, but just little nagging issues, and I think she's put those behind her for quite some time. And she's a full sister to Enola Gray, who's a filly I trained that was a really nice talent filly. And hopefully Alice is going to live up to, you know, her sister's namesake.
For those that don't know, Nick Alexander, of course, can't say no. And Nick, this is a homebred, cowbred of his, by Grayson, and out of very appropriately unsung heroine. And for those that don't know the name Alice Marble was a tennis star pre-war and during and in and around World War II, and not a name that's going to be familiar to too many people. And so Nick, I don't know if Nick is running out of Brooklyn Dodgers to name horses after, but he on the female side, he's coming up with some interesting choices now. That's very cool that he named a horse Alice Marble.
Yeah, he's great like that. He just loves reading history books, and if it's not something, you know, like that, he'll name them after baseball players and World War II heroes, and he finds the greatest names and fits them well.
Yeah, and she's got, if you want to read an interesting story, you know, I've talked about the golf star that was murdered in Lexington. Alice Marble's got an equally fascinating, mysterious thing around her. Look up Alice Marble; you'll be intrigued. Phil, let me also touch on some of the other results from the weekend, and we didn't actually mention Accelerina, who was third in the Royal Heroine, and. You also were third with Ain't Easy in the Oaks, and both of them get nice stakes placement out of the weekend.
Yeah, they're two nice fillies. Ain't Easy, I think we did not envision the trip that she got in the race, but it was just one of those things. The other Yak Teen horse broke slow, and instead of we were envisioning Ain't Easy sitting second or third. All of a sudden we're on the lead, you know, and I think that's not where that filly wants to be. She wants to be stalking and pouncing like she did in her prior victories. But she's a filly, I think, who knows, down the road I'd like to point for the Acorn one-turn mile for her. I think that'd be right up her alley. And she might, if she trains very well, which we could – center to Kentucky as well, and runner in something like the eight bells. So, you know, nice filly with a lot of potential, and, you know, I think we're just going to change it up a little bit and find a bit different placings distance-wise with her. Excelerina, she wants to go the other way. She just needs more ground. We just saw the race was coming up short. Gave her a shot in here. Got a graded stake placing. But I think that filly will improve going a mile and an eighth and further. And she's a filly I think can become a graded stake winner down the road.
Very, very nice. I'm glad we circled back to them. Let's also look ahead because this weekend, going into Friday particularly, if I keep at it, I think I'm going to have a chance to talk to everybody who's running horses in the Maker's Mark. Count again on Friday in the Maker's Mark Mile.
Yeah, this horse, he's just kind of blossomed this year. We gave him a nice break and a couple months off, and he's come back with two nice solid victories. I believe he might have broke his maiden or won an allowance race at Keeneland, back in the day. But so I think he's a horse he can run on any kind of turf course, and he's doing really well. So we decided to give it a shot, shipped him over there, and we've got Joel Rosario in the irons, and anytime you have Joel, you gotta have a good feeling over there coming from behind on the grass. So it's came up very tough, salty race for sure, but I wouldn't trade my place with anybody in the race.
Well, it's been the whole story with Agave and Samson and the deal that was made that brought the two Samson veteran stars, and you've done a great job going on with them. I mean, he's got to be what now? How old?
I think he's six or seven.
Hold on, I got the PPs here. Hold on, I'm going to tell you right away. He's 7 years old.
He's seven, and he's lightly raced. You know, I think when he's had his issues or needed time, they've been great and giving it to him. So, I definitely see another year or two in his future. He's doing really well right now, and he's going to need to run his A-plus game to beat those horses. It's a very salty race, but I think given the right kind of trip, he should be right there.
Well, he does have the win at Keeneland that certainly goes a long way. For those that haven't seen the whole field for the Maker's Mark, Set Piece came up yesterday with Brad Cox, and in this next hour we'll talk to Chad about his runners, Public Sector, and he's got a first-time North America for Judmont called Mason, but this field is just terrific. Quick rundown. Paulo Lobo's got both of his stars. In Love has the rail. Sherl's Spite for Atfield and Chuck Fipke. Jordan Wyckoff and Maker with a Tone, last seen in the Pegasus Turf. Masson is mentioned for Chad. The other Lobo, Ivar, he also, of course, a winner at Keeneland in the Shadwell a couple of years ago. Smooth Like Straight for the trainer formerly known as Whitey. You with Count Again, Some Like It Hot Brown, Set Piece, Mirror Mission, and Public Sector. I mean, this is, you want grade one for $600,000, this is what you want.
Yeah, I think we need to get Keeneland to double the purse after that lineup. But that is definitely an impressive field. So I think, what you see here, I bet you'll see a bunch of these back at Keeneland in Breeders' Cup time. So, but my horse is doing well, and he's going to have to.
Well, you can take it up with Shannon Arvin, when you see her on Friday in the paddock. I got to ask you about one maiden that goes on Friday at Santa Anita, and this is kind of funny because it's H&E. This is a Midnight Storm filly making her third career start. Her name is Midnight Silence, and she was bred by our friend and actually a partner in one of our horses, Lenny Cohn, Cohn's Kosher in St. Louis, and his partner Pedro Gonzalez bred Midnight Silence. Is Friday the day?
You know, we're trying something different with her. Mike Smith rode her last time for me, and he thought I had her pegged wrong. So we'll see how sharp Mike is. And we all know he is. But he thought I should be running her along on the dirt and take the blinkers off. So that's exactly what we're doing. She's trained very well. Her last couple of breezes have been good. You know, she'll have no excuses going into this race. And we'll see if she's she's better on the dirt than she was on the grass.
Well, and the best part is you've got a built-in excuse. If it doesn't go right, you can just blame it on Smith.
Oh, yeah. No, you can one way or the other, you can always blame it on the jockey, at least from a trainer's perspective. But yeah, no, all kidding aside, she's doing well. And, you know, we'll get to see what she wants to do here.
Got to ask you, too, because I don't remember if we talked about these. No, we must have, because you were on in March at some point. But what's next for Acclimate and Legs Galore?
Acclimate is going to run in the San Juan Capistrano. We're going to just freshen them up and point for that race, and then hopefully we'll have a fresh horse out there. Legs Galore, we're going to see if we can get to the race at Belmont. I believe it's Belmont weekend. It's a one-turn grass race. I believe it's a grade one.
The Jiper.
For fillies.
Oh, Yeah.
There's a race there, and I think that's going to be our next target. And she's going to have to train well, but that's what we have in our sights for her.
Excellent. Well, Phil, I could ask you a million things. You got all the nice stake horses, and they're all cycling back for the middle portion of the year. And meanwhile, a Santa Anita Oaks runner in Desert Dawn, and a fun story, too. So keep them healthy, happy. Good luck. Get lucky on Friday, and we'll talk soon.
You got it. Thanks, Steve.
Always tremendous. Phil D'Amato, everybody. And you can follow Phil on Twitter. I want to say Phil D'Amato 1, if I'm not mistaken. I can remember. This is, you know, remembering these kinds of addresses, you know, the handles. It's like years ago when we used to have to remember phone numbers. Of course, now nobody. When I was a salesman, I literally could remember 300 phone numbers without looking in the phone book. Now I can't remember Tina's phone number, but let me see. I'm almost positive it's Phil D'Amato 11. Phil D'Amato 11. So I guess he was the 11th Phil D'Amato to get a Twitter handle. Always enjoy talking to Phil. Let's take the top of the hour break. A University of Arizona racetrack industry program graduate, and also a graduate of Chuck Simon University as well. Back with Len Green after the break, Chad Brown as well, Andy Serling later. Got to be judicious too. I got a stack of stuff for Chad too to go through. But Len Green is going to give you all kinds of tax advice free. He turned off the meter for this. Back after a break at the races, SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association
Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's